In April 2018, the Knoxville History Project honored Bob Booker for his significant contributions to Knoxville history. Booker grew up in the bottom area of East Knoxville, graduating from Austin High School in 1953. Following a 3-year stint in the US Army, stationed in France and England, he returned to his hometown to study at Knoxville College on the GI Bill, graduating in 1962 with a degree in education. As a 2-term president of the student body at Knoxville College, Booker became involved in Knoxville's civil rights movement, organizing sit-ins on Gay Street to advance desegregation. In 1966, he was elected as Knoxville's first black Tennessee state representative. In the 1970s, he served as administrative assistant to Mayor Kyle Testerman and on the Tennessee Civil Service Commission. Later, he served on Knoxville City Council. For 11 years, he was the director for the Beck Cultural Exchange Center. Booker is a dedicated author of Knoxville history with several books to his name and has penned hundreds of local history newspaper columns. His autobiography, From the Bottom Up, was released last year. In this podcast, the Knoxville History Project presents a Q&A with Bob Booker and KHP director and historian Jack Neely.
Goodness knows I don't know what's going to happen now, but I'm game.
I don't know.
So you got my back. Victor, you got my back.
Yeah. One thing we have in common, Bob, every time we have a conversation, I never know where it's going to go. So we're in the same boat. But I want to present you this in great appreciation for the Knoxville History Project. This is for your valuable contributions to Knoxville History over the years. It's suitable for hanging or whatever you'd like to do with it. But I really do appreciate your... But Bob, considering all the things you've done over the years, I just listed, I think, a partial resume of yours. How do you, when you meet, the rare occasions, I guess, you meet someone you don't know, how do you introduce yourself?
Well, I just call my name. I'm Bob Booker. I'm interested in who the other person is. So I open by saying who I am, and I'm hoping they'll tell me their names, where they're from, their professions, or whatever. And I guess that's the opening, Jack.
Yeah. Well, you've been pretty busy, and you don't call this retirement, I guess, lately, but you've written a couple of books recently. Just people give me a hard time for writing too many books, but you've turned out a couple just in the last year or so. Your last one is called From the Bottom Up, and it's an autobiography, more or less.
That's right. It's autobiographical, and indeed I had 2 books published last year, but it's not as simple as it sounds, because the last one I published, I'd been working on it 30 years, but I kept putting it off and did 4 other books in the meantime, and then I said it's time I get this book done, and I'm glad I waited 30 years, because I had much more to add to it. It is autobiographical, but it's not necessarily all about me. It's things I saw as I was coming along. History that came out of my own eyes is really what it's about, From the Bottom Up. And it's called From the Bottom Up because, as you say, I grew up in that neighborhood that was known as the Bottom. And, of course, in your articles, you called it Cripple Creek because it was also called Cripple Creek.
Yeah. It was called that in the early days, back in the 1880s and 90s. The saloon era, it was called Cripple Creek. But we're talking about the area just east of the old city, more or less. Would you like to describe what it was in your memory?
Yes, it's east of the old city. In fact, the boundaries for the Bottom was central on the west, Bell Street on the east, the railroad tracks on the north, and Vine Avenue on the south. It was a low-lying area that was ravaged by First Creek many times. Mm-hmm. Cripple Creek because there's so many crooks and turns in it.
Did it flood in your memory, First Creek? Did it flood a lot in your memory?
It did. Thank goodness I lived about a block and a half or 2 blocks from the creek on a higher ground. So it never got to my house, but my neighbors all the time were flooded out. The Red Cross was always there helping them out. And that's why we as young people got involved in supporting the Red Cross, because we saw what the Red Cross was doing for people in my neighborhood when that creek came up and ran them out.
Well, you were you'd accomplished several things. You've been in the Army and so forth by the time of the sit-ins, the desegregation movement. Tell us about the sit-ins. Whose idea was that, and why did this seem necessary? We'd had some legislation that seemed to suggest that desegregation was on the way. Why did it seem necessary in the early 60s?
Jack, I had lived in Knoxville until I was 19 years old. And I had to ride the back of the streetcar on the bus. I drank out of separate water fountains. I went to Chilawi Park only one day a year when blacks were admitted there on the 8th of August. But then I went to the Army when I was 19, and suddenly I was free. I was able to go to any movie I wanted to see, stay in any hotel, eat in any restaurant or whatever. For 3 years, I was in France and England, and for the first time was a free man. But when I came back to Knoxville in May 1957, I was back to square one because we still had those segregation laws. I couldn't go to the Tennessee or the Riviera. I couldn't eat at a lunch counter in downtown Knoxville. If I saw a movie on Gay Street, I had to sit in the balcony at the Bijou. And, of course, we had to use what I call the fire escape to go around to the side of the building to go up to the to see a movie. And then we saw students at A&T College in Greensboro, North Carolina, demonstrating at lunch counters, trying to buy a hamburger, trying to buy a Coke. And I, as president of the student government at Knoxville College, said, that's something we ought to be doing as well. So we organized a sit-in movement here in Knoxville to desegregate downtown lunch counters and movie theaters. So that's actually how it came about.
Who were the most influential people in changing, in your memory, in changing things? Things changed were not immediately, but it was a pretty successful movement, don't you think?
Well, it was a very successful movement because with the methods we use, we were able to get city leaders, city fathers, to understand what we were trying to accomplish. I'm always thankful that Mayor John Duncan was in that office. He wasn't necessarily in favor of our sitting in, but he knew what we were up to. And we also had former Mayor Kaz Walker, who believed that we ought to have our rights, and former Mayor George Dempster, who owned the plant that made Dempster dumpsters. And in several meetings, he said, colored and white eat together in my plant. So I don't know why colored and white can't eat together at lunch counters. So we had those three men who kind of kept a lid on things and influenced the community that this is something we ought to do. And further than that, Jack, I always like to tell this story. White people in Knoxville would go home, turn on their television sets and watch the national news. They would see Selma, Alabama and Birmingham, where police dogs bit people, where fire hoses knocked people down, where policemen used billy clubs on people demonstrating. And they said how awful it is the way they're treating those people. But they never thought about the fact that I in Knoxville, Tennessee, could not go to the corner drugstore and drink a Coke or get a banana split. But once we began demonstrating in Knoxville, they realized that Knoxville had the same problem as Birmingham and Selma, and many of them refused to cross the picket lines, and some of them even got into the picket lines to help protest what was going on. So our situation here ended more peacefully than in some other cities because of the leadership here, no Bull Connors and all those people who stirred up trouble. In fact, Mayor John Duncan told me one time that he got a call from one of those southern governors. I forget whether it was Mississippi or where. But he called up Mayor Duncan and said, Mayor, aren't you a southern city? And he said, yes, we're a southern city. well, why are you allowing that stuff to go on in downtown Knoxville? And he said, because we don't want the problems you're having in your state. So that was the kind of attitude we had from our city and civic leaders that helped solve the problems that we had.
Well, coincidentally with desegregation, about the same time, was something else called urban renewal. Did one have to do something to do with each other? You were one of the first people that I know of in my reading of history to publicly criticize the excesses of urban renewal. Did one have to do with the other? Was this just a coincidence?
Well, they may have been separate things, but we were harmed by segregation and urban renewal. No question about it. My section of town, the Bottom, needed urban renewal because we were living in a lot of shacks. The creek did ravage our neighborhood, so we needed some relief. So when we thought about urban renewal, yes, some remedy was needed there. But urban renewal went too far. There were land speculators who wanted much more property, much more land for whatever they wanted to use it for. So they took stately homes. And the real problem is they completely destroyed the black business community. The black business community was largely where Summit Hill is today, East Summit Hill. All of the both sides of Summit Hill were full of our businesses that were never to be replaced once they were taken. Because urban renewal did not offer replacement value for properties. They offered fair market value, which meant that if you lived in the house that was worth $20,000, in order to move to a comparable house, it was going to cost you $30,000. And if you didn't get the replacement value, you were put in debt. You were put in debt when your house was taken away from you, your business was destroyed by urban renewal, and 14 black churches were destroyed by urban renewal. So not only did we have a double whammy to deal with, we had a triple whammy trying to rebuild our community. And the black community has yet to come back. Even though those projects went on for the most part in 1958, 59, and 60.
Yeah, the one thing the Coliseum space was enabled by urban renewal, and that was actually one of the more nicer middle class black areas where that was located. But when the Coliseum opened, this was something that was welcomed to some extent by the black community.
Well, Jack, I remember I was a student at Knoxville College. And I saw in the paper that the Coliseum had been completed and was ready for opening. And so I called the box office and asked if there would be a section for Negroes. The lady said, no, because we're going to open on an integrated basis. When I passed that word around, everybody at Knoxville College was jumping up and down because it was the first time a city-owned institution was going to open on an integrated basis. So the Civic Coliseum kind of led the way and changed things at Chilhowee Park, because I'd been going to Chilhowee Park only one day a year on the 8th of August until 1948, when black people were then allowed to go every Thursday. But after the Civic Coliseum opened, everything was open to everybody, so we were delighted about that.
Do you remember any shows or events at the Civic Coliseum in those early days that stand out in your mind?
Well, I was more interested in going to the dances. I was a fiend for dancing, and there were about 20 or 30 social groups in Knoxville that had dances at the Civic Coliseum. So every Friday and Saturday, one time I would wear my tuxedo, and the next night I would wear my white jacket to these dances. But yes, there were shows that came, but I'm not sure I remember a lot of them.
That didn't inspire your karaoke career, or is it? There's several people whose songs you cover who were at the Coliseum in the '60s, but yeah.
Dr. Tumlin,
this is a secret, is it?
Where's Dr. Tumlin? I told you to come up here and help me if he throws a hardball question to me. Yeah, I need some help.
No, it's he's a great singer. If y'all haven't had a chance to see him, he's actually, if you don't go out to karaoke bars, he's got actually a CD you can pick up.
And Jack, I've always wanted to be a singer, but was just too shy. You know, I'd get on stage now and have a good time. I cut up. But there were those days I was that shrinking wallflower, and I wouldn't do anything in public. In the seventh grade, I had a couple of friends who were great singers. I said, golly, I wish I could do that. And in high school, that happened. But I never thought about karaoke until I was at Marie's Old Town Tavern one night. And Marie Owens is sitting right over here. And, of course, I'd been a disc jockey, and I played these records, and I could hum along with just about anything that came up, whether it be country, rhythm, and blues, and pop. So I'm sitting at the bar one night, and Marie said, Bob, are you going to sing? I said, Lord, no. And so the beers started coming. And the rest is history. I was fortunate enough to do a benefit concert for the Beck Center October before last, and people came to hear me sing. So I do a pretty good job with it, I think. I don't sound like Frank Sinatra or Tony Bennett or Nat King Cole, but I sure do their songs the way they do them. And since we're on this subject, Jack, I have a bucket list, and there's only one thing on that list, Madeline. I would love to do a series of concerts at the Senior Citizen Centers in Knox County. That would be the crowning thing in my life, to go and entertain people at those Senior Citizen Centers. Hint, hint.
Well, wonderful. You've had about 11 careers, by my count, Bob.
I can tease Madeline, because Madeline and I have done karaoke together. So Madeline is an excellent singer. So we have a singing mayor, that's for sure.
Yeah. That's not something to miss. Anyway, we won't sing, but I want to say happy birthday to you, by the way, Bob. I won't say how old you are, but you're 83 years old, all right? And a happy birthday, and really we really appreciate many more years, because you're a credit to the community.
Thank you for listening. This podcast is brought to you by the Knoxville History Project, a nonprofit educational organization researching and promoting the history and culture of Knoxville. Learn more at knoxvillehistoryproject.org. We'll be right back.